It was always part of the plan to put a brewery in, but for many years it was just a plan.
It's 100% acquisition of Green Beacon.
No, we had a chat with everybody.
Anyone would have seen this coming a mile away.
You know, the passion and the dedication to beer and brewing.
Oh, yeah. That's a super simple and direct question.
It's always fun to get to speak about beer.
Hi, I'm Brews News Editor Matt Kirkegaard, and that's just what we're here to do, talk about beer. And this week, we catch up again with Mighty Craft CEO and Managing Director, Mark Haseman. We first spoke to Mark way back in February 2019, shortly after the business, then named Founders First, announced it had invested in Newcastle's Foghorn Brewhouse. In that conversation, Mark introduced the Craft Beer Accelerator's vision and outlined its unique model. That conversation spurred a lot of interest from brewers who reached out to us afterwards wanting to be put in contact with Mark, which certainly spoke of the promise that the vision for the business held out. This week, 2 years after it listed on the ASX, I wanted to revisit those earlier conversations and see how the business was delivering on its early vision. While craft beer was a major focus in our early chats, the business has more recently spoken extensively about its plans for spirits. It has enunciated a shifting focus for its hospitality plans. And most recently, the once founders-focused Craft Accelerator has had what is apparently its biggest success with a manufactured, marketing-driven mainstream beer brand, something seemingly quite different to what it set out to do. It also continues to lose a bit of money. As with anything new and different, it can be hard to measure success with a model such as that being pioneered by Mighty Craft, especially when, at least to my eyes, aspects of it defy business conventions around scale and growth. As a public company, there's a little bit more transparency into the business as well that we can dig into. So with all that background, I wanted to catch up with Mark to dig a little deeper into the model, how it was progressing, and put some of those questions I had around the viability of the business and whether it's continuing to evolve. As you'll hear, it's a pretty probing chat that goes places I haven't seen covered before elsewhere. And I thank Mark for being so willing to jump into it. Mark Haseman, welcome to Beer as a Conversation.
Thanks, Matt. How are you?
Not too bad. I should say welcome back because I think this is our third formal chat. You feature regularly on our pages, but this is the third time you've featured on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. No, great to be back. And in actual fact, it's 2 years to the day that we actually listed on the ASX. So it's kind of nice to be talking to you as we tend to as some of the key milestones roll around for Mighty Craft. So no, thank you for having me on.
Very much so. And it's almost 3 years. I think it was February 2019, back in the good old days when days were sunnier and borders were, more passable that we first spoke.
Yes. No, it's been a while and a lot's happened since then in the world around us and in each of our businesses. So good to have the opportunity to talk to you about it.
Let's get into that because we've seen, it's been a year of regular announcements from Mighty Craft as it is now, Founders First when we first spoke. Maybe give us the, executive summary of what you see as the achievements.
Yeah, look, I think it's been a massive year for us. The headwinds of COVID obviously have been a real challenge for the industry, and it's been very difficult, I think, for everyone in the industry to cope with that in terms of one, looking after their people, managing through what's been a difficult time where we probably thought, this year we're going to come out and open up, and then we were sort of back into lockdown again, particularly New South Wales and Victoria really feeling the brunt of that, and trying to keep our people up and about as well as safe. And keep them in their jobs as well during these challenging times. So, I think for us, it's been a big 18 months, probably actually. And over that time, really, what we've been focused on, Matt, is to build what we call our platform for growth, which is now largely complete. And to be growing strongly while we've been building that has been very challenging. So, we've been investing in or acquiring a bunch of businesses while we're still trying to meet our customer needs with the portfolio that we have and dealing with that, heavily COVID disrupted environment, which has been difficult for everyone. So I guess what we're most happy with, I would say, is, we've kept our team together and built what I think is a really strong team. And we're very happy with our top line growth in FY21 and And certainly year to date, that growth has continued strongly. And certainly feel that our business model is resonating well with customers and consumers out there. And the growth of our brands are evident of that. And I think going forward now, you know, for us, really looking to drive not just the top line, but of course the bottom line, and leverage the platform that we've built in terms of the people and the capability and the expertise we're building within our team to really drive the businesses that we've invested in and the development of our people and have an even greater impact in 2022.
Let's dig into it a little bit. So when you say your platform for growth, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I think what I mean by that is the way we operate. So obviously two parts to our business. We invest in businesses and brands and back people to help them grow. And then we kind of have our, I guess, our shared services offering, which is the sales, distribution, marketing, supply chain service that we provide to those that we invest in. So for us, that platform is really that crew, you know, supported by technology and process to enable us to make sure we can preempt what we think we're going to sell, work back with the breweries and distilleries so they can make to that and work with our customers to sort of bring that to life. So when I talk about our platform, it's really that operating platform that we have in terms of our people, processes and the technology that we have sitting underneath that to enable us to scale without having to invest a whole lot more into that once we've sort of got all that set up. So that's really what I talk about, what I mean when I talk about our investment in our platform for growth.
In hearing that explanation for platform for growth, I hear a lot about the sort of the business elements. I don't hear a lot about product, for example. Mighty Craft was a craft accelerator. I think, you know, 2 years after you lodged the volumes that we're seeing from the beer volumes that we've seen, I think you're 1.7 million litres in your latest annual report annually.
Yep, that sounds right. Yep.
And this week we did see, a big announcement about Better Beer, which is your partnership with the Inspired Unemployed, where you're hoping that 2022 will get to 3 million litres.
That's right.
An interesting pivot, I guess, is the word that the Better Beer doesn't really fit within that craft beer category. And in fact, you even were quoted in our article saying that it was a mainstream. Mainstream beer is a huge category in Australia, and Better Beer has clearly struck a chord with a wide spectrum of enthusiastic beer consumers. How does that fit within a craft beer accelerator when you've gone to mainstream and that seems to be where you've got your brand tentpole?
Yeah, I think really the way I look at it, Matt, there's a lot of discussion around what is craft, what isn't craft. And I guess the focus really for me is thinking about, what's the macro theme within beer. What's happening? Certainly, the macro theme of craft is very strong and is continuing to grow. And our brands are growing way ahead of the market and our peers. So we're seeing this flight to local continuing, and also the flight to premium and better for you drinks is very clear. So I think through our sort of portfolio strategy, we're really well placed to take advantage of that. And what we are looking to do, I suppose, is to keep bringing scale to our beer business. If we just talk about beer for a moment, to get the economies of scale for all of the brands to capitalise on. So by having that platform, it gives us the chance to, keep building. Our beer portfolio before we started working with the Inspired Unemployed and Better Beer, those brands are continuing to grow strongly. We don't expect those to come off in any shape or form. In fact, our sort of strongest growing beer brand on a year-to-date basis is Jetty Road, which is doing very well after a very difficult period in Victoria with the on-premise and so on. Businesses like Ballistic growing strongly, along with Mismatch, that's come into our portfolio during the year as part of the Adelaide Hills transaction. So, I think the way that I look at it is that, You know, craft to us is more about an ethos. You know, it's celebrating the entrepreneurial spirit and the passion and the commitment to the category. And so we definitely are playing in that sector. You know, the better beer opportunity is there to probably come in at the entry-level craft, I would say, the bottom end that is taking drinkers from mainstream. And it's not that we're looking to create, you know, necessarily a mainstream brand, but, you know, it's still a $60 case type purchase. And it's definitely got all the challenges of what you would suggest or what you would experience within craft in terms of, you know, the production and, you know, the challenges of dealing with growth and so on. It's just a different way, I guess, of bringing a beer brand to market. So, look, we, you know, I suppose I focus more on what we're trying to do with our total business to drive growth and bring scale. And, you know, Better Beer is certainly going to help some of these other beer brands keep growing. And just like in our spirits portfolio, bringing on a business like 78 Degrees that has established scale and is still absolutely premium. But, you know, that's starting to prove a bit of a Trojan horse in our spirits category as well to push in and create new opportunities for more ranging for other brands like Seven Seasons, Kangaroo Island Spirits and the like. So, look, I think, you know, we've always taken a portfolio approach, and that the way I would look at Better Beer is not so much as mainstream, but it's actually just drawing some of those mainstream drinkers and they're trading up into that product. So, yeah, that you know, a long-winded answer to your question, Matt, but that's the way that I see it.
you've thrown a lot out in there, so I might have to sort of dig back into some of that.
Sure.
You've said growth a couple of times talking about the craft brands. What sort of growth has Jetty Road, for example, seen over the last 12 months in terms of volume growth?
I mean, really, for the last quarter, sort of still growing at around 40% plus. So, you know, strong growth coming out of COVID, and the financial year 2021 was slightly less than that, with a lot of the on-premise sort of closing. So, you know, that's still growing really strongly, and we certainly expect Jetty Road to continue to be a big part of our portfolio going forward, of course, and keep growing strongly. And, you know, some of these other brands like Ballistic, you know, still growing sort of 15 to 20% on much bigger bases than the same time last year. So, you know, I expect, you know, that we can continue to, if our proposition is meeting the retailers' needs and the punters are enjoying our beers, then, you know, I don't have any reason to suggest that growth will come off.
Okay, so we'll just talk about Jetty Road for a sec. So it's growing about 40%, and it's the one that you own 100% now these days?
Not yet. So we're sort of in the midst of an offer to the Jetty Road shareholders, Grant and Blake obviously stepping out and looking to do something else. So, we're sort of, 80%+ of that. And I expect that to be a bigger stake in Jetty Road in the next few months to come. But, yeah, it's obviously one of our bigger, it's our first business that we've invested in. Mm. So a lot of passion from within our team for that particular product.
So it's grown at 40%. You have, it's one of your larger shares. Is it profitable? Is it making money on that growth?
It's certainly on the path to profit. So, you know, a big part of these.
So it's not effectively.
It's not. Yeah, it's not at the moment. And, you know, the brew pubs are a really important part of these early stage breweries as they grow to scale, as you would appreciate. So, you know, if you're investing hard into the brand, you create that experience in the venues. And, you know, with Germana, you know, being closed for a decent chunk of the first quarter and impacted last year as well. And even Lawn, you know, has been closed over the winter. So, yeah, we really need those venues to keep driving, you know, to support the top line, but also overly support the bottom line. We invest in building the brand and get it to that critical point of scale so that the total business is turning a profit. So, you know, we look to probably do that within Jetty Road, if not during FY22, certainly FY23 would be the year that we should get to the sort of scale we need for Jetty Road to be profitable in its own right, inclusive of the wholesale as well as the venues.
And that's where you've just used the second word I wanted to come back to, which was scale. So you're growing. But the model is a very decentralized business model where you've invested in breweries around the country.
Yeah.
If any one of those does actually reach scale, none of them are actually big enough to produce that beer at scale. You don't have a brewery in your network that can produce beer cost effectively at scale.
Yeah, I think we have some options there, Matt. I suppose that the key thing for us is we've got some breweries in each of the key markets that we think can scale as our needs require. Now, obviously, up in Queensland, we have both Slipstream and Ballistic that one have great brewing capability, but also the opportunity to expand. And, you know, I know they're sort of redlining from time to time, certainly at Ballistic at this time of year, and Lockie and the guys working hard to keep up. Down in Victoria, we've invested into the Jetty Road Brewery in the past 12 months, and that's, you know, well placed to sort of deal with our growth profile over the next, I'd say, 12 to 18 months. And then Mismatch is probably the one that has the biggest capability to scale over in the Adelaide Hills with Ewan and Dayton and the team there. So, you know, I think it's just a matter of where, over the next couple of years, where the growth really comes from, and, you know, whether we decide to expand one or two of those to create a bigger brewery of scale within the network, or we use a bit of outsourced contract brewing to bring some more efficiency into the model. So it's really a combination of all of those things to make sure we're working our capital the right way, but also, you know, continuing to build our internal capability to produce, but, you know, not max out our people at the same time, because it's even Mismatch at the moment on the basis of, you know, now that we are doing the sales with the combined team, really, you know, the last 6 or 8 weeks have been really busy as things open up. And I know that the team there are really, again, redlining over peak to keep up. So, which is a nice problem to have. You know, it's as things are opening up, Matt, things are probably growing a little ahead of where we thought they would be, which is a really positive thing. But, you know, we have to enable the team to keep up with that growth, which is always a challenge.
And we've come back to growth, but again, looking at that question of scale, you know, if Ballistic has a tearaway success with one beer, you know, do you invest in increasing their volume? But then what happens when Slipstream, you know, which is its crosstown cousin, you know, if they have a success, do they use the Ballistic capacity, or do they have to expand as well, which would seem to be a very inefficient model? Or, you know, having a Mismatch, having a brewery in Adelaide that is expanding, but then not being able to capture the growth from one of your other breweries in the network with their scale.
Yeah, so I think it's a bit of a balancing act. And as we get the other side of peak, we can have a better look at, you know, what our sort of networked production solution looks like, because, you know, there's also the cost of moving the product around the country. And, you know, certainly the good thing is, particularly up at Slipstream, we've got, you know, a brew house that can do a lot more volume than what they're doing at the moment, and is built for that growth. We just need to add more tanks. So it'll be just, you know, making those measured steps to make sure we're not investing too far ahead of the curve. But, you know, we do have some flexibility, I guess, across the main three or four, being Slipstream, Ballistic, Jetty Road and Mismatch, where we can move a bit of volume around if we need to help take pressure off one of the others. But, yes, we'll need to get that forward-looking production footprint. You're right, it doesn't make sense for us economically to invest in, you know, to create, you know, three or four big breweries. So I would suspect we'd sort of look to make one or two champions within our network to bring the economies of scale, but then also use the likes of, you know, where we're better beer is being produced out of Griffith at Casella's, who are doing a fine job with that, and the opportunity to potentially do some more production there, you know, is definitely something we can look at so that we can optimise the production network within Mighty Craft and with our partnership with them now through the better beer business.
Which, again, coming back to the model for, you know, Founders First and then Mighty Craft, you've invested, you know, in craft breweries at not an insignificant investment in them, and yet for the scale that you're talking about, you're going to a third party, which really, like when you are contract brewing, it doesn't really give you the benefit of that scale because you're toll brewing effectively. So you're outsourcing your scale to another producer.
Yeah, so I think, again, it's just a balancing act looking at the overall requirements we have to produce. You know, we're fortunate that we have a very good relationship with the Casellas and with Coke making a change in relation to their beer production. There's some capacity there, and you've got another, you know, Australian privately owned company, you know, willing to support an Australian listed company, and to leverage and bring more efficiency to their brewery. So, look, I think as long as, you know, we're not adding to the load of our people and we're maximising what we're putting through our own breweries and driving the most efficient outcome we can across the network, you know, then I think, you know, we're in a pretty good place. So,
but I'll just stop you there because it doesn't sound like it's a particularly efficient model that you've got investing in small, inefficient breweries nationally that can't scale, and when they do scale, going to another provider. The capacity that you just mentioned that Coca-Cola has, they were contract brewing before the Founders First model started. You know, yep. That was an option 3 years ago rather than investing in, you know, breweries, you know, expensively in breweries when that capacity was there already.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we have always been very much a brand-led business. So, you know, our passion has been to, unlike some others that have gone before us in the industry, where we really wanted to, rather than building huge production somewhere and then build our brands off that, we wanted to support local communities, local businesses, and invest into the breweries and the brew pubs to create a great experience and connect those brands into the community. So nothing has changed there.
But your biggest, your most successful brand has been something that's got nothing to do with community and nothing to do with local. It's got to do with some social media influencers and is playing in the space that is the opposite of the craft beer space, even though I take your point that, you know, it's an introductory beer for craft beer. So that sounds nice, but the reality is that your most successful product has been the opposite of all of those things.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there's, I guess our portfolio evolves and, you know, we still have great passion for investing into local businesses and local communities, and that will, you know, for us, we have, you know, a bunch of different businesses and brands we've invested in, and you only have to look at what we've done at Jetty Road or what we've done at Slipstream in creating a great venue on the back of the brewery, and what we've, you know, what we've got happening up at Mismatch in Adelaide Hills, and then Kangaroo Island, where we've invested significantly into the community. Now, it doesn't make sense for us to do that everywhere, and we're not going to do that everywhere. And you're right, the Better Beer brand is a different way of going to market. It's a different, I would actually say it's a different type of community that the boys are building through their social equity, if you like, social media following and the equity they have out there in the market. So, you know, it would be foolish to suggest that that's a model that you can continue to do and replicate all the time. You know, I think for us it's about having a portfolio play, which we always had, and you know, that is a different style of business, but it doesn't mean that we're any less committed to building the craft community and building businesses that, you know, to a point we'll invest in them, but we're not going to obviously create 3-4, you know, scale breweries around the country, because to your point, Matt, it doesn't make sense to do that. We can't compete on that basis with the big guys. We have to build the brand, build that sense of local community, connect them in through the brew pub or brew pubs in those states where we're building the brands. And, you know, for us, it's evolving that and then build them out into other markets after that. And, you know, Better Beer has certainly been a runaway success in its early stages, but, you know, it's very new to market and, you know, it's got a job to do ahead of it, although we couldn't have been happy with the start. But, you know, that's... you know, it's not a normal way of building brands. It's quite a disruptive play for us to be involved in. And, you know, it doesn't mean that we're going to step back from, you know, I guess how we started and how we, you know, can look to continue to build the Mighty Craft business.
I guess if I boiled it down to one question. You know, I hear you talking about passion and community and growth and scale. How is that going to translate into making money? You know, 1.7 million litres of expensively produced, you know, individually fairly low volume craft beer isn't a very profitable way of making money for a business that has, you know, sunk the costs that Mighty Craft has.
Yes, yeah, so I think, you know, what you then, you need scale through your business overall to make the whole work. And, you know.
Which again, I'm still not quite sure where that scale is going to come from. If eight breweries are all making a little bit more beer than they are, that's not scale. And then when you've got a brand like Better Beer that does seem to be hitting scale very, very quickly, it's...
I would argue, so Ballistic is you know, only probably a year to 18 months away from being a brand of meaningful scale. Jetty Road is not far behind that. Mismatch, Hillsider, for example, are already brands of scale and profitable businesses. And, you know, Slipstream will take a little bit longer. But, you know, there's, you know, four or five brands potentially that, without even talking about Better Beer, that are products and businesses of scale that will enable them to, you know, make money in their own right. And then when you overlay potentially the opportunity to use some network production to help, that's where we then start to get, you know, the cost of goods efficiencies and to buy better and do these sorts of things. So, you know, I probably beg to differ. I think there's, you know, probably half a dozen brands on the beer side that and cider, which obviously is still an important category in the country that can get to scale. And if brands like Better Beer help, you know, fast track, you know, the growth and profitability of the business overall, then that's great. But the core that we started with, you know, still has its job to do, and we certainly, you know, haven't changed our approach in relation to building those out. Your point is well made, though, that to have, you know, four or five beer brands of scale where you then have to produce all of them individually at their own breweries is something we're going to need to steer into down the track, and it only really makes sense for us to have, you know, one or two breweries of scale. But that doesn't mean that you can't still have a great brewery with an amazing cellar door that's producing a bunch of the specialty range and so on that do command a premium price that means that the business can continue to make money. So that you know, it's not a simple model. It's why, you know, no one's really done it to date. And, you know, with beer, I feel like, you know, we've talked a lot about spirits in the last 12, 18 months, but there's certainly been no lack of focus on continuing to execute the beer strategy and feel like, you know, we're in really good shape in terms of where those businesses in their own right are going.
You mentioned that, you know, a brand like Ballistic is going to get to scale. What do you consider is scale for, you know, what sort of volume achieve scale for a brand like Ballistic?
Yeah, I think, you know, once that starts to sort of get to 800,000 to a million litres, it starts to, you know, with a strong growth profile, and then you overlay the venue strategy that the guys are implementing up there, you know, it starts to look like a really good business. And we know that the brand is certainly resonating, given the results in Gabs and the like. So, you know, that really hasn't changed at all. So it's probably around that, you know, we've often talked about, you know, the valley of death between sort of 250 to 300,000 litres and a million litres. And you've got to push through that as quickly as you can. And the closer you can get to the top end of that, the better off you are. And once you push through that, then you can start to drop some more heavy dollars to the bottom line. And if you've got a venue or two that's making profit as well, then it just helps take a bit of that pressure off the volume build. So, yeah, that's kind of the way that we look at it at a macro level.
But I guess that's where I find it interesting that the valley of death that you talk about, you know, is the volume that an individual brewery would be looking at. So even if you get a brand like Slipstream or, you know, Ballistic that does, you know, hit that million litres individually, I guess for Mighty Craft as a business, you're being sandbagged by the other breweries that, you know, are still vastly inefficient in the network and are a drain on any profitability that one scale business reaches.
Yeah, but I think, you know, if you're brand led, you have to be prepared to do your time and build these brands out. And if you're there'll come a point at which some of the brands are not necessarily going to push through to get to that scale. But if you've optimized the brewery build so that it's still as efficient as it can be and you've got a good venue attached to it, it can still make money. It's just a matter of if you invest into a brewery to expect it to do, say, 2 million litres and it's only doing, you know, 300,000 litres, then, you know, you've overinvested and it makes it difficult. So I think that's why we just have to keep monitoring and you know, invest a little ahead of the curve in the breweries that we have in the network, but not overinvest until, you know, we just sequence the investment to make sure that it's going to work for us. And to your point, if geographically we can find one of the breweries that can perhaps take a bit of the load for the others, then that makes sense. But, you know, we do have premium price products and, you know, Ballistic and Jetty Road, Slipstream, Foghorn, they're not cheap. And, you know, to get the growth they're getting is terrific and at that price point. But that's why, you know, we leave the pricing where it is, because we need to be able to drive scale but do so in a responsible way for the price points we need to hit to cover the cost base of the business. So, yeah, it's all a balancing act and, you know, but I feel like we're making really good progress, and I think our shareholders will see, particularly in the second half of FY22, that the whole model is starting to hang together, you know, from not just a beer and spirits perspective, but within spirits and within beer as well. So, you know, but it's a lot to work through and across the different categories. It's really interesting to be involved in. And these are all the sorts of conversations we have internally to work out how we can sort of optimize the performance of the business and the businesses and work with those in the particular business units to achieve what they're trying to achieve as well.
Which, again, so far I've focused on the scale and the profitability of individual businesses and whether they're reaching, you know, efficiencies. But then the other thing about Mighty Craft is the business itself is actually an overlay over the top of these individual, you know, relatively inefficient production businesses. And just even going through your latest results, I think the, you know, with the top four executives and the board payments, it's, you know, over $2 million payments just on senior management a year for the company. And, you know, that's a lot of low margin beer that needs to be sold just to pay for your top management team without the, you know, all of the business units that are fairly, it's not a small business in head office at Mighty Craft.
No, and that's really because we have this shared services offering that we provide to the partners that we invest in. So we take on, you know, what happens is, you know, Ballistic, Jetty Road, Foghorn, et cetera, don't need to invest in their own sales team or marketing necessarily or supply chain. We basically take that on, and yes, we charge a commission for that and a fee for service. But what we're doing is building effectively a shared services offering that can work across the beer businesses, cider business, spirits, RTDs, seltzer, and look after the customer and deal with all of those issues. And so for each of those businesses to do that in their own right would be more expensive than what it is to leverage what we call as the operating machine of Mighty Craft or the operating engine. So that's where you get the economies of scale.
But even with you taking that burden off the breweries, none of them, if any, are actually making a profit at this stage. So
no, but I'd say they're closer to doing that than what they would have been if they had to invest in their own sales, marketing, and supply chain. And you know, as we get a couple of brands of more scale into the network, then that helps reduce the cost for everyone. And you know, we've always said from the outset we're brand led, and we're going to be playing across beer, cider, spirits, RTDs. And leverage our team to drive the sales and distribution. But we are, you know, the reason we weren't going to be breaking even till sort of 2023 initially was because, you know, we needed to invest in our people and our capability to have the platform that we can then leverage. And I guess what I'm saying to you, Matt, now is that we are getting very close to that point now where that operating leverage is really kicking in, and that the efficiencies come. And obviously, being a listed company as well, we have responsibilities to shareholders from a governance and compliance perspective that mean you need to have a proper board structure, you need to have a proper management team and company secretarial and legal and all these sorts of things. So yes, that does come with a cost, but if we can create you know, the really high capability that we have within our organisation to provide a service back to each of these businesses that we've invested in, You know, they're getting access to the calibre of people that they couldn't afford in their own right, and are paying less for it than what they would have to do if they were, you know, investing in their own team. So that's where it sort of needs to get to, and then eventually it starts to work for everyone.
Mm. Again, look, I have to admit, I don't have a background in business, but having been spent a lot of time talking to brewery owners and trying to understand their business, that's what drives a lot of this. So it's always a challenge for me to look at balance sheets and things. But you know, one of the things I did when I was this morning before we chatted is I looked at the Good Drinks annual report as well, and you know, the two businesses have a very similar market cap. I think, you know, low 100 million, you know, 106 and 109 or something like that. So roughly similar. Good Drinks has a significant centralized production facility with, a spoke model of small, you know, local breweries that build the brands. But, their production is very much centralized, and they're making, you know, almost 18 million litres annually, and you know, $51 million revenue with a $10 million EBITDA. You know, yep. Mighty Craft had $31 million revenue and a loss of $15 million. And that's where I'm sort of trying to work out where the scale and efficiencies are going to come with the model that you've taken.
Yeah, and I think they're two really great question, Matt. I think two really different approaches. So Gage Roads basically took a production-led approach and built a brewery over in the west there, which is, you know, invested a lot of money into that. It's very high-quality brewery, very efficient, and we've, you know, basically started as a production business and have been gradually building their brands over time and talk about, you know, the growth of their branded product. They're building out, and they're now starting to invest in brands and doing, you know, the venues and so on as well. So that's good, but it's fundamentally a very different approach, whereas we are taking a brand-led approach, build out the businesses, get them to a point of scale, and that's when we'll start to get the operational efficiencies coming. So that's why it's been a drag on our bottom line. Our growth profile remains strong and will continue to be so, but, you know, we've got a different strategy, and we're executing a different strategy. So in the fullness of time, you know, you'll have one that's been production led to where they are, and that seems to be working well for them, and we're brand led and taking a different approach.
Well, they actually describe themselves as a house of brands rather than a branded house, so that's where I'm trying to understand where the difference in the model and your model. You know, you even said it again, operational efficiencies. And mm-hmm. when you look at the two businesses, theirs seems to be the one that, you know, has the ability to actually capitalize on its brands, because its operational efficiencies are actually locked into its model. Your model doesn't seem to be particularly efficient.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I'm not really going to comment on their business. I think that the guys are doing a good job, and they've got a terrific team and doing really well. But I think what we are is, you know, we're very much, you know, a diversified beverage business, and you know, we have exposure to not just beer and cider, but now white spirits, dark spirits, seltzer, and pushing into whiskey. So, you know, we're a very different business. The caliber of our management team needs to be able to look across all of those categories and understand them and deal with them, which brings a different level of experience and capability potentially. So but we're looking to unlock growth across multiple categories and work with the big retailers to do that. So so there's different efficiencies that come, I suppose. You're sort of focusing on the production, and I get that. That said, we're one of the three biggest spirits producers in the country. So with that, we make amazing award-winning spirits out of the 78 or Adelaide Hills Distillery, and you know, we're investing into Kangaroo Island Spirits to produce some, you know, to ramp that up as well. Two highly award-winning sort of businesses that are big production businesses in spirits. And so over time, you know, that's going to obviously be an advantage for us. In beer, we've invested in smaller businesses to date. And yes, it does has brought a level of inefficiency on the production side. And that's something, you know, that we need to deal with down the track. But that there is efficiencies when it comes to, you know, sales, marketing and supply chain and sort of using that across multiple businesses within beer and cider, but then also across spirits at the same time. So, look, I just think we're quite different. Your points are well made. We've both started, you know, the Gage Roads guys, and where we started are very different places. Where we're going in our ambition is very different as well. And, you know, our ambition, it doesn't just sort of include beer and cider and venues to support those growth. It also includes quite a big spirits ambition and a whiskey ambition as well.
Yeah, and again, I'm probably not well qualified to speak too much on spirits, but then also, you know, whiskey is a, it's kind of like a future play, so we might have to come back to that in a year or two when that unveils itself, because at the moment it's a little bit like, we're putting it on the never-never. That's for future us to worry about and hopefully pay off. I'm looking at the, you know, how viable scale and economies are in the beer business. And if I could just return to the Better Beer for a second.
Sure.
What is the partnership? Because so the Inspired Unemployed guys are 50-50, or is it 60-40?
So we've got, you might recall, Torquay Beverages. Torquay Bev Company is the kind of the incubator business within the Mighty Craft portfolio. So Nick Cogger, very passionate founder of that business, started off with sort of Kay Booch is doing Nosh as well, which is doing very well. The opportunity came to work with Matt and Jack through Nick. So we've got a 60-odd percent stake in Torquay Bev, and then Torquay Bev has invested into the Better Beer business. And there's sweat equity for Matt and Jack as part of that arrangement for them to put, you know, they work really hard. They're putting a huge amount of work into building awareness of the brand and helping then market the brand. The boys earn some sweat equity through that. And
so sweat equity, do they get a share in the business through that, or do they get a payment, like a commission payment or a percentage, a licensing fee, for example?
Yeah, they get a share of they get equity into the Better Beer business in its own right. They sort of earn their equity in that by the work that they're doing at the moment to really build the brand out. And the boys sit on the board as well. Matt and Jack sit on the board of Better Beer with a couple of the crew from Torquay Bev. So, you know, it's a, you know, really, I guess, looking to build the business together and so everyone can do well and certainly is hit the ground running.
Do they get shares in Mighty Craft, or it's shares in Torquay, or is it shares in Better Beer?
Shares in Better Beer Co. itself.
Okay, so so Mighty Craft has 60% of Torquay, and Torquay has a percentage of Better Beer?
Yeah, it has a majority stake in Better Beer, and then the boys have sweat equity to build on the other side. Yeah.
Okay. There was a big announcement that you're hoping, 2-3 million litres next year. I'd imagine then looking at that, because it's through Endeavour Drinks Group, it's exclusively through them, and they're fairly good to go. I know you've got a good relationship with them through some of your key staff, but they would be fairly aggressively pricing that through you, I'd imagine. And then you're toll brewing it, which means you don't really get the efficiencies of that, and then you have a percentage of the brand itself. So it doesn't sound like, even if it really takes off on a low margin business in a more mainstream space, that there's a huge profit upside to Mighty Craft, even if it does take off.
Yeah, no, I think, probably best to be judged in the fullness of time as to what the business can do. I think, certainly it's exclusive from a package perspective with EDG, mm-hmm. And ranged in all their sort of Dans and BWS, so that's been terrific. But in terms of kegs, that has been certainly well received out in the market. We've only just got the kegs out in the last week or so, but that's available more broadly once we're able to sort of get the reliability of production based on, the demand being a lot greater than what we'd expected in the first few weeks. But I think, we can access some good pricing And, you know, I expect it will be a significant contributor to Mighty Craft profit. And, you know, we'll see that over the fullness of time. And maybe the next time we'll chat, we'll have some numbers out that will sort of show that, you know, it's going to be extremely positive. So
100%, yeah,
because we take on all the sales and distribution, of course, for them. And there's a fee structure attached to that, which means that, you know, it ends up being very helpful for the Mighty Craft network in totality.
I'm very conscious of time. So there's just a couple of other things that when I was reading back over this, you know, as I said, we've done a lot of stories on Mighty Craft over the last 12 or 18 months. One of the ones I'd completely forgotten about was the share program that you launched a year ago, in fact, December 23 last year, with Upstreet. Yeah,
yes.
Where's that going? Because I jumped on their website, I didn't see you listed on it anymore, or I didn't see you listed on it.
Yeah, no, we're still doing some work with them. And most of that work was done through our venues. We were trialling a bunch of things in terms of the fractional shares and building that loyalty base. So, that probably took a bit of a hit when we got impacted by COVID and venues were closed and under pressure. So, you know, we're looking to reboot, doing more on that with Christian and the team from Upstreet in the new year. So, probably didn't get the momentum that we'd hoped, impacted by the venue closures. So, yeah, we're looking to bring that back through more strongly next year.
And what is the venue strategy? How would you summarise that? Because, you know, we saw Jetty Road going to Melbourne and then not, and, you know, that was a bit of a financial hit to that. We've seen some stuff around the Hunter region that you bought and I think have sold but leasing back. What is the venue strategy for Mighty Craft?
Yeah, so the venue strategy for us is very much around building the brand experience and bringing the community into the brand. So even if you use Jetty Road in Victoria, you know, our home down in Germana, you know, is doing very well, and the venue's doing well right next to the brewery. For us to get a strong footprint in our local market, we were coming into Melbourne, and as you pointed out, we had secured a venue in South Melbourne, or a building in South Melbourne, to convert into a venue, and it was you know, really going to be not economical to do that once we got into COVID, and it was just a hard call we had to make. And, you know, if you think about Jetty Road as a coastal, you know, sort of brand, and, you know, the great things about the Victorian regional life, you know, to have a venue on the surf coast with Lawn makes sense. So we've got one over there at Lawn that should do really well for us over summer. I guess the way we've worked around how do we get a presence in Melbourne is the venue at Moonee Ponds, which is still called The Mighty, has basically had a massive tap takeover by Jetty Road, and we've sort of decked it out, you know, with most of the taps now Jetty Road, and the whole experience inside very much about Jetty Road. So, I guess for us really it's leveraging our venues to drive the brands, and that's what we'll look to do more of, probably look to do less of where we started out with the Mighty venues, which were a showcase of our whole portfolio, and the Hunter Valley. We did do a sale and lease back of the Germana site down at Jetty Road, which is really about, you know, we wanted to make sure we could maximise the amount of cash to be invested into the business, and particularly help insulate us from, you know, further COVID impacts. So we sort of invested well in that land early, and then realised that profit, which will sort of come through in the next week or so. I guess really for us it's about prioritising building the brands and the businesses. So owning the dirt isn't always a priority for us. And the Hunter Valley site has been difficult to manage remotely for us. So it's starting to bounce back to life now. On the back of coming out of COVID, but of course, you know, Foghorn is the lead brand up there through Newcastle and through the Hunter venue as well. So that one's sort of quite easy to sort of point towards Foghorn to help sort of drive the growth of that business.
So will we see more Mighty branded venues? Because I guess for any small brewery, you know, a venue strategy, you know, they get the retail dollar, they control, you know, they've got guaranteed tap points, and so long as they can get people through the door, you know, it works well for them. But then there's still a finite capacity that any one venue has. So I would have thought to accelerate the entire portfolio of brands, you would require a extended network of venues.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, that's one approach you can take, and certainly one we subscribe to, where I think if the brand can be really strong in its local community and have that connection, and then you can expand out from there, that that works. And so, yeah, we're, it's unlikely, Matt, that we'll be doing more of the Mighty style venues, and would look to sort of focus on the branded venues would be what I would say. We just sort of do have one exception, I guess, in South Australia, which is Lot 100, which sits up in the Hay Valley there, right next to the Mismatch Brewery and right next to the 78 Degrees Distillery, just across the lawn. And, you know, that is an amazing venue in its own right, and, again, showcases all of those South Australian brands. And, you know, that business is doing exceptionally well. But, look, I think, you know, we may do potentially a few different expressions of Lot 100 over the journey, but on the whole, we'll be focusing on building branded venues like Slipstream with the amazing sort of venue attached to the brewery there in Brizzy, and you know that's more of the approach that we'll be taking going forward.
Although again, I'm looking at Slipstream, which I think it's one of the best venues in Brisbane, incidentally, to sit and have a beer. But beautiful venue. Queensland this year hasn't been as badly affected by COVID as many of the other states, and yet I understand that it's still not profitable, and it's also doing a lot of contract brewing. It sounds like nearly every other brewery in Brisbane is having some beer made there.
Yeah, I mean, Slipstream is a profitable business.
It is, okay.
They're doing well, you know, and yeah, they do bits and pieces for others as well. So very, very helpful for the local community to brew some product. And I think, you know, it is a brewery that can deal with a lot of volume and scale and complexity. So, they do deal, and the team there do some contract brewing for others. But on the whole, yeah, Slipstream's tracking very well. And, it's good growth at the top line, but importantly is turning a profit, which is good for all of us.
Terrific. Oh, that's good. So I must have been looking at an old report.
Definitely you would. Yeah. No. It's definitely sort of turned the corner up there as things have opened up, as you referred to. And then with the venue attached to it as well, is starting to hit its straps, which is excellent.
And again, like it's a favourite of mine, and I think it's making some of the most consistently good beer in the area. So congratulations to them.
Yeah. No, they're doing very well.
Mark Haseman, thank you very much for joining us for our now annual chat about all things Mighty Craft. And, good luck to you and the team for 2022, and most importantly, have a great Christmas.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me on, and always good to talk about the beer category with you, mate. And, look forward to catching up with you again in the new year.
And I'll learn a little bit about spirits before we do. So
no problem. We can talk whiskey next time, mate. It's a long build, but it should be exciting growth for the business as well. So I look forward to that.
Well, whiskey is my it is my pleasure that I don't have to, turn into a work. So that might change before we speak next.
Yeah, no, very good. All right, Matt, all the best, mate. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.
And that was Mark Haseman. As with all of our conversations, I'm keen to hear your thoughts, but particularly with this one.
Don't forget, if you like what we do at Radio Brews News, you can help us out in a number of ways. You can sponsor the show, either by a small monthly contribution or through a one-off donation. You can find details in the show notes. You can review our podcast on iTunes or your favourite podcasting service. Let us know what you think and help others discover the show. Finally, you can tell us directly what you think by sending an email to producer@brewsnews.com.au. All letters received will receive a Brews News bottle opener. We love hearing your thoughts on the stories we cover, because beer is a conversation.